Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. We are having a little episode. That man you saw in front of the camera, that was Robert. Just, oh, and that was Bill. It's going to be about the blame game today.
Wow.
I can feel it. Got the blame game coming on. So, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
So
and
we know who to blame.
Yeah.
Talk about our sponsor,
well,
Bill.
Yeah, now that we got all our technical stuff ironed out here, didn't seem like it was that
hit our heads
difficult.
On the microphones and turned up the sound.
Yeah, got all the important things done. Hey, our sponsor this morning is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Pape offers all your ag solutions. If you have a situation where you need get out there and till the ground or mow or whatever, just go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And also, they are a Honda generator dealer, and that season is coming on here pretty quick. So go by and talk to them about a new generator. And also, just recently, they picked up the steel product line. So chainsaws, weed trimmers, you name it, they got it all up there. So go by and see them. Give them a call at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And we're already hearing about PG&E electricity shutoffs, so you might want to get on that sooner rather than later.
They announced that last week that they will be shutting off the power, so...
Great.
Yeah.
Something else to look forward to if you live in California, besides the fact the legislature may go back into session, and we all know they're going to pass some wonderful laws. So it's May 3rd today, in case we replay this program, because I kind of think we are. And we have another fumble on the play. Our guests have very long biographies, so we went through and highlighted the important stuff so that, Evelyn Wood wasn't available to read it for us, because they're long, and these guys have really interesting, really, really interesting backgrounds, and I think you're going to find the topic new and different for us. You could find everything about our guests and our show and 10 years of archives that you're free to use however you like. They're commercial-free MP3 files at wethepeopleradio.us. And you can also find us on Tuesday nights in the Reading area on KRDT Channel 23.7 on the American Uncensored Network, which is television. Although we have outfits and faces for radio. But Robert makes it the television, which is sad. We told him not to move the camera in any closer. Because it's just like that. So... Bill, why don't you tell us about our? Well, we're having both guys on at the same time, so I guess he's not really our first guest. He just happens to be listed on the page, and I suppose I should tell you how I found these guys. I was checking my email. Go figure. You know, we're all locked in basically, so nothing better to do but check email. And I was at work, so I got an email from the VA, which most of the time doesn't have anything new or late breaking, just more happy news about how great they're doing, and. It kind of caught my eye. I don't even remember what the thing said, but it had something about human behavior and risk assessment and stuff like that. And I thought, ew, that's fun. So I was sitting at my desk, and so I had the ability to kind of, you know, listen to something. I wasn't driving and talking on the phone and doing 17 things. So I thought, oh, I'm just going to listen. And I heard Brian Marin chatting about his background and whatnot. And I thought, ew, this is cool. This would be a great radio program. So I sent him an email, and because he's punctual and all that, he quickly wrote back and said that they would be able to come on, and then he asked if one of their other partners, Greg Williams, would come on with him. So I'm going to have them tell you more about what they do, but we're going to tell you about what they've done. How about that?
There you are. Yeah, Brian is a decorated Marine, high-threat protection security professional, and subject matter expert on human behavior pattern recognition and analysis. He spent the last 17 years conducting both real-world and training operations all over the United States and the Middle East, in both Central and East Asia. He's a highly experienced, highly motivated professional, has the ability to adapt to any environment, whether he's on the battlefield or the boardroom. So he's done a lot. He was hired by Cubic Applications to be a tactics analyst and newly conducted infantry immersion trainer. say that quick.
I was just going to say
IIT, aboard Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton. During his time at the IIT, Brian trained and advised thousands of Marines on how to make better tactical decisions during highly complex and chaotic live fire training exercises. He's also worked as a security contractor for the U.S. Department High Threat Protection Program. He was responsible for personally protecting hundreds of U.S. government personnel in multiple high-threat environments, including Iraq and Afghanistan. Brian formerly worked for or worked as a senior instructor team leader for Orbis Operations. You can look them up online. During Brian's tenure at Orbis Operations, he trained hundreds of law enforcement professionals, including U.S. Border Patrol, DEA, ICE, TSA, U.S. Marshals, and other federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. He holds a Master's of Science in Applied Psychology from the University of Southern California and a Bachelor's of Science in Political Science from Arizona State University. He continues to serve the veteran community as both an ambassador for Carry the Load, but also as a board member for Crusades 22. So you can look both of them up. Good organizations, veteran support organizations.
And that was only part, actually.
Yeah,
that's a
condensed version. I mean, we can go into...
Not to put too fine a point on that, but that was the condensed version. And the regular version's on the website and also on theirs. So before we bring on Greg, because we've got just a couple minutes before the first break, we probably should figure out whose voice belongs to whom. So, Brian, what did we miss? Anything good?
Oh, man, whoever that guy was sounded pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, he's a trained professional. Don't try that at home.
Oh, that Bill guy.
This is Brian. Thank you guys so much for having me come on. And like you said, you heard me on the VA's podcast and got me on there. And then I thought it'd be cool to come on your show when you reached out. Absolutely. And then also, if you want the real expert in the room, I said, well, why don't you just bring on Greg Williams? Because he's the one that wrote all this cool stuff that I get to go out and teach. So you get to hear it from both ends of the horse, I guess, if you're getting both of us on here.
That's
I didn't dare read his bio. Yeah, that was
the short straw on that one. We'll have Evelyn Wood here after the break reading Greg's. And how do you pronounce the name of your company?
It's called Arcadia Cognorati.
Huh, that's what I was going to pick. But then I thought, well, I should just have you say it rather than me butcher.
No, I appreciate that. No, that's always an interesting. It makes people kind of go, hey, wait, what is this? And that's part of the point of it. So
it was kind of funny because I looked up.
You got to look into it. Yeah.
I looked up, what is a Cognorati? There isn't one, by the way, just in case you're curious.
You guys can go up, and listeners, of course, can look up what Arcadia refers to, and it's, we throw back to the ancient Greeks a lot because they were the ones experts at human behavior long before any of us were around, right? A lot of this stuff has been around for a long time, and then cognorati was kind of a term that Greg came up with. It's just, people who deal with cognition or metacognition, and the whole point being, how do we think our way out of a situation? And there's a lot that can be put in there, kind of taking off the term almost like paparazzi or something like that. So that's kind of where those terms came from. And so, why not have him on here as well, too?
Yeah, I just thought it was cool. So it says in the, in your mission statement, I really like the line. I put it in red on the website. We believe your competence and your confidence... rebuild your competence and confidence so you can make the right decision at the right time for the right reason. Like, well, that's in short supply, needless to say.
Yeah, well,
we could use
a lot more of that. That's what people are looking for, right? So anytime anyone we work with, and we all do, human behavior-based skill set, so it's all what's going on inside your brain, right? So that can get us into a lot of areas, but what it is, if I come to your organization, Aaron or Bill, and I'm not going to be the one to go, oh, here's what you need to change. Here's what you got to do. You guys already know. You have the answers. Just maybe you haven't really articulated it yet. Maybe you aren't really sure what it is. But you're the experts in what you do. And what we come in is, well, we're going to layer on this training, this skill set that's based in science. and it's going to allow you to make the right decisions. It's going to allow you to take what you already know, what you've already experienced in your life or at work, and go, oh, you know what? Hey, we've had the answer here all the time. I just need to do this. And that's usually the best way we think to do things, right? I don't want to come in, you know, someone's house and tell them how to decorate it, right? So it's your...
Neither do I, because it sounds boring and tedious. Okay, so on that note, we'll take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with the elusive and indomitable Greg Williams.
Yeah.
Keep the cotton ready to yourself.
Yeah, everybody, just get your seatbelt ready. So you are listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Official coronavirus theme song. Welcome back. Every time I hear it, it makes me laugh. I wish we could just carry it around like on a little recorder in the grocery store, maybe to make people happier.
Yeah.
Gosh, we went there last night. It was like people were panicked. It's like being in a little rat maze. Everybody started running every time you walk near them.
It's funny, 2 months ago, whoever heard of social distancing? I never heard that term before. Now it's...
We used to make fun of close talking. Remember, they did a whole Seinfeld episode about that. It's over now. Nobody will, in the future, people won't even understand what they're talking about. So back to the serious topic. Our other guest, Greg Williams, is a decorated veteran urban law enforcement professional and a decorated veteran former soldier with over 30 years of combined experience and expertise. He's an adjunct professor of sociology and has done work for Western State University, San Diego State University, and University of Southern California and USC's Institute for Creative Technology. He's an industry expert in irregular warfare for the defense community. I'm dying to know what irregular warfare is. He has worked with the DEA, the Mobile Enforcement Team, the 5th Judicial District's Drug Task Force and Shooting Task Force in Colorado. He's held virtually every law enforcement position from patrol officer, shift supervisor, SWAT, director, undercover narcotics operations supervisor, undersheriff, and interim chief of police. Yeah, I think that is probably everything.
I didn't hear kindergarten teacher in there.
Yeah.
That's the true test.
If he was posing as Arnold Schwarzenegger being a kindergarten teacher, he's probably already done that. It's just not even on here. He also has a U.S. Department of Defense top secret security clearance. That's where he does that, by the way, Bill.
Oh, okay.
And has worked as a subject matter expert, contractor, or consultant for many U.S. DOD agencies. And outside the U.S., he has worked with NATO commands, and I won't even list all the possibilities of those. I mean, if you really want to know they're not the three-letter agencies, it's just multi-letter agencies. This is like acronym central. Greg has been there and done that. If I could just list the acronyms, we could make this very quick. And I'll read the second half a bit later, but Greg, you've done a lot of stuff. Are you like 120?
Don't believe everything you read.
are you like 120 years old?
Yeah. Well, Brian Marin and I sat in the same room and we said, look, we're both out of work and we're both homeless. I'll write your resume. You write mine. We opened up a couple of Tom Clancy novels and there you have it.
There you go.
And he said, those knuckleheads at We the People, they'll put us on.
Exactly. So you're the first chance that we've had to test our resume, and so far it's worked perfectly.
Oh, yeah, we'll make you shine. Don't worry about that.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, because, you know, I don't even know what a lot of these things are. Rescue Team Boar Star. I'm like, what is that? I mean, I kind of deal in this stuff a little bit in my day job. Yeah. I've never heard of it.
Trust me, your phone will be ringing when you get off
the
show.
Half of these things, crazy.
Thank you so much.
So what does that really like kind of boil down to? Like, how'd you get into this thing? What's the irregular warfare about? I got a lot of questions.
So the simplest way of thinking about it is that there's a lesser trained, less experienced, less well-armed organizations that can hold up against bigger, stronger, slower moving organizations. And if you've ever thought of the David and Goliath, a lot of the insurgencies in the world started thusly and were able to hold their own against Russia, the former Soviet Union, the United States for years and years and years in some what seemed to be never-ending conflicts. So asymmetric and irregular warfare are those type of guerrilla tactics that allow those smaller forces to operate, to remain hidden, to hide in plain sight. And so we specialize at Arcadia in teaching people human behavior pattern recognition and analysis. And the easiest way to think of that big old resume is that everybody has been doing human behavior pattern recognition all their lives without training. You know when your spouse or significant other is happy or sad. You know when the baby needs changing. You know when you're hungry or, you know, when things feel tense around the kitchen table. The thing that's lacking in most humans is the analysis. So what we do is we bring an extra set of lenses along and teach people how they can predict as threats and therefore prevent dangerous situations well before they ever occur.
I think something that our society could use, and I know we're talking a lot about the military application, but you guys also work with companies and lots of groups. You do a lot of training outside the military field.
Yeah. And first of all, thanks for having us on. Thanks so much. And Brian did such great work, and right now with Carry the Load, he's involved in their virtual march that'll be ending here next week on Memorial Day. All great stuff that Brian's done. Just because we're former soldiers and former law enforcement and we work with first responders, we work with everybody. When we do a regional training approach, we talk to the schools and the churches and human resources personnel, because if it was forged in fire, if it worked on the battlefield, clearly it's going to work in the boardroom. And if it's been tested in the most hostile Spartan environments on the face of the planet, well, then obviously it's going to work for you in your everyday operations. And that's what we try to get people to understand. Some of the best things in the medical world, some of the best advances in aviation all came out of the horrors of war. So what we've learned and been able to apply in bad situations is to the benefit of anybody that wants to increase their human performance or increase their ability to lead or to communicate transparently with the people that they work with.
It makes a lot of sense. And from a threat standpoint, it's much I thought the topic was interesting because I know that's always been a big debate, especially in the industry of law enforcement, the concept of profiling. That always gets such a bad rap, but that's really
it's
the most
necessary.
God, that's the most effective way to figure out who is truly dangerous. Are you kind of giving it a new? Are you shining it up and repackaging it for them?
No. Actually, pretexting and profiling are both absolutely legal. Racial profiling is horrible and illegal, and it should be, and it should remain outlawed. The idea of profiling: if you take a look at your computer, you have a computer profile. If you take a look at any of your social media accounts, they want you to build a profile. When you buy things online, when you go to Amazon, you have a profile. So there's nothing wrong with profiling. Advertisers, politicians, everybody does that. What's wrong with it is if we're only looking through one lens, if we only look at your political background, or if we only look at your religious background, or your ideological concerns, or your First Amendment rights. When we specify one thing, like race or religion, then that's wrong, and we should never do that. And the great thing about what we teach is your race, your religion, your politics never come into it. We don't look at the motive. We look at what you're saying and what you're doing, and that behavior is what's important to us.
See, I think that makes a whole lot of sense, and I think that that really is what has been going on all along. But
yeah, I've never heard it put that way before, but absolutely right. Everybody profiles.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah.
I mean, you decide what line to get in at the grocery store, for heaven's sakes, you know, based on who looks like they're being a dummy.
That's a great example right there, the line at the grocery store. And Bill, you said it too. Well, this is something all people do, right? And that's why Greg gave that great definition of human behavior pattern recognition. That's how your brain works. That's how every human works. So you're already doing it. And that's why what happens is, you know, if we don't get that the analysis portion and trained on an analytical framework on which to articulate what it is that you're observing and seeing, and then actually use it in a legal, moral, and ethical way, right, we tend to jump to unreasonable conclusions, right? So that's usually what happens, where people will pick up on a pattern, and they're getting that right, and then they go, oh, well, it must be X, or it must be Y, and you're going, well wait, what did you use to get to that conclusion? And that's kind of where we come in.
Is to turn it from we noticed it to how can we be proactive to either work with it or against it?
Yeah. And remember, proactivity is the ability to sense make your environment. So you have to be able to tune in. What happens is humans, we're already biased, and we have things like confirmation bias. We believe our own BS, and we reinforce our own BS by only reading and watching those television shows that support the BS that we believe. And so what happens is we're looking, you know, at the rest of the world through a straw. So what we do is we widen that aperture and we say, hey, listen, what are the artifacts and evidence that you're using to support this conclusion? And if they fall short, then guess what? You got to throw them out and you got to start over. And as Brian said so eloquently, you have to create an architecture. So left of the event, the things that happened before, they start coalescing and they start forming these clusters and cues. And that pre-event indication is either going to tell you that everything's going fine because it's just like every other event we've been in, or guess what? I'm a little suspicious. Something feels off today. Well, what we do is we put the science behind those feelings. When you say, hey, you know, I get butterflies before I go on the air, well, it's important because that's cortisol coming down from your amygdala and warning you that you're about to go speak in front of people. You know, the hair on the back of my hen stands up. Well, the hair on your neck is your erector pili muscle, and that's activated by electrochemical neurotransmitters that are warning you that something is new and changed in your environment. That dog is looking at you funny and might want to bite you. So all we do is take a giant evolutionary step back and put you in touch with the hardwiring, the framework, the analytical framework of the human brain.
Yeah, see, I that was the part I haven't read yet. The programs that you've created are all scientifically and academically vetted and also combat tested, currently being used by DOD agencies, U.S. forces, Homeland Defense partners. And I just thought it was interesting that you've also developed something called Gatekeeper Situational Awareness Training. I'd love to make sure we don't forget that, to help combat the suicide pandemic. And I don't know what a sharp SAT is, to help address the sexual harassment dilemma for the U.S. Army. But that's a big deal, too, a really big deal. And so we want to make sure we get into that. But I really like the idea that all these things that we know, you know, we can feel them. And it's not always a good decision-making tool, but it sounds like maybe we're a little farther along than we thought.
Yeah. It's amazing, though, how many people go through their day-to-day life and never really look up and pay attention to their surroundings and have that situational awareness they need to stay out of trouble and to make the right decisions.
You always hear from people that, I thought it wasn't a very good idea to do whatever, and they ignored it. So, maybe when we come back, either one of you, how about let us know on that ignoring thing. Like, how much should we trust what we initially think? And maybe we haven't had your extensive training, but are we smarter than we think, or should we just leave it to the professionals? You are listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
That's what Greg and Brian are doing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just watching you. So either one of you, so what about the intuition thing? You know, you hear a lot of victims of crime will say that they had a feeling they shouldn't get into the elevator because the person in there looked scary, and then they felt like, oh, that's really silly. I should just, and they talked themselves out of it.
Yeah, no, that's a great example, and that happens a lot, and so that's why a lot of what we teach is we call the science of intuition, right? So there is no sixth sense, right? You can't point to a physiology book or anatomy book and go, hey, where's the sixth sense? It doesn't exist. But we have that intuition, that gut feeling, which is really just our primitive brain, right, our limbic system that's been designed to keep human beings alive. But as a whole, I mean, it's an entire race, right? We're still operating on that same system, right? So it's there. We just don't ever have to use it anymore, right? We live in a comfortable, safe world. I mean, despite what we think sometimes, now more humans die from overeating than from undereating, right? So you're more likely to die overeating in a McDonald's parking lot than you are to get chased down by a tiger, you know, because when you're out hunting for food, right? But we still have all that stuff on board. So if we can learn to use it and listen to it, and like we said, we always say, hey, trust your gut. If something doesn't feel right, then you can leave. You can get out of that situation. So yes, that intuition is there, and you got to dust it off sometimes and relearn how to use it. And I know, Greg, you love talking about the science of intuition and your sixth sense.
As you know, Brian has it spot on, so there's not too much to add. But the idea is that all human beings walk through, and we're on sort of a rote memorization based on our experiences. We're lazy, so we repeat the behaviors that give us the best return for our investment. And we really never challenge ourselves. We go to the same place for breakfast or to grab our coffee. We park in the same part of the lot. And so what we unintentionally do is we dumb life down, and we make it easier for terrorists, criminals, and insurgents to predate us. So if we were still living back in the early days, the less evolved days, we would be prehistoric food fodder, you know, for the tyrannosaur threat. So what we try to do is we try to make it simple and fun to remain alert and aware in your environment, and that worked very well in Iraq and Afghanistan, other places that our U.S. forces had a fight. You can't teach every soldier going forward, sailor, marine, or airman, what every bomb is going to look like or what every camouflage pattern is going to look like or what the hide sight for a sniper is going to look like. So you got to teach them simple stuff. Where would I hide to kill me? What do I have available in this environment that I could use to hide that bomb? Where would I park a car bomb to do the most damage? And once you start the critical thinking portion, then what happens is those self-experts, you know, because you've got a whole bunch of tacit and experiential knowledge in your own life, that starts coming forward, and then you start getting subject matter experts in the field. And people would always say, Jim Mattis, General Mattis, chaos actual for the Marine Corps, would always say, hey, do you think that a farm boy is better than this, or maybe a hunter is better than that? And that was, you know, what created the Combat Hunter program, is that we said, okay, well, we'll show you. We'll show you where that intuition comes from. And yes, some people are naturally better than others, but the idea is you can train to a standard. You can increase situational awareness and open people's apertures.
So if you were going to, if somebody was listening to this and thought, oh, I'm one of those people. Like, I do the exact same thing every single time. You know, walk your dog. It's funny, even dogs fall into that pattern. Like, I find that if I walk our dog in the same route all the time, he gets really hyper-vigilant about, you know, cars, garbage cans, for sale signs, because he has nothing else to think about. He's already walked that way all the time. And so I thought, geez, I'm kind of messing up my own dog. I need to take him elsewhere so he can look at new things and think about new things and pay more attention to what I'm telling him to do, rather than just like walk, walk, walk. Yep, this is the bush we'd be on. But I think people are like that too, you know, with the parking lot and stuff. So what do you tell them? Just if it's routine, do something different.
Yeah, there's small things you can do just like that. Another great example, and you know, dogs do the same thing, right? They fall in that same pattern. If I'm not up at the right time to take my dog out, she's sitting there going like, hey, what's going on today? What's happening, right? So you can take small changes of just, hey, the route you take, right? So, hey, instead of walking every day, I come out of my house, walk the dog and go left, today I'm going to go right and take that new route. I'm going to leave 5 minutes earlier or 20 minutes earlier than I typically do. And then all of a sudden, your whole world opens up to you. When you force yourself to take a new route and go into an area you haven't been, all of those lenses, all of those skills start to drop back in. Why? Because it's novel. It's new to you. Your brain's going, ooh, a piece of candy. Oh, what's that over there? Oh, look at him over there. Right? And once you start to do that, right, you'll kind of fall out of that habit a little bit. You know, and this goes into even why, you know, why are most motor vehicle accidents within, you know, a couple miles of your home? Well, yes, technically that's where you drive the most, but, but what happens is you get close to home. Your brain shuts off. How many times have you driven home from work and gotten all the way home, you pull in your driveway or out in front of your place, and you get out and go, man, I don't remember anything about that drive. It's because your brain was shut off. You were just going through the motion. So changing those up, making those small changes, it's easier just to kind of flip that light switch back on and kind of view your environment with a new perspective.
Yeah, I would say.
And I would add something to that, Brian. I would say that for both of you, Aaron, you guys have to be predictably unpredictable. And the reason for that is because once we set a pattern, two things happen. One, our brain stops trying, so food doesn't taste as good. Our relationships stagnate. The artwork and the books that we write and the shows that we present just aren't as exciting anymore. They're not as vivid anymore. So the reason, number one, is going to increase and improve my quality of life. Reason number two is I don't want to be a victim. I don't want somebody looking at me through the lens of, you know, saying, hey, I can victimize this person. So it's a win-win situation all the way around.
Yeah, you can, I think all of us could see that in our own lives, things we could do to be more aware, because you are kind of a sitting duck if you're, I mean, it starts when we leave home. How many times have you driven up the street and had to go back around the block because you couldn't remember if you shut your garage door or not?
So
we go on to autopilot, I think, really, before we've left the driveway, which does explain a lot of the driving out there.
The other day I left 15 minutes late for work, and I was immediately surprised at the traffic pattern. It was totally different than the time I normally drive. There were more cars. There were different cars. It was just totally different. So that's exactly right. If you change it up a little bit, you're going to have a totally different experience.
See, it's kind of funny. Bill is the routine at our house, and I'm the random. So it's always different when I go out the door. Oh, my gosh. Well, so I guess I'm kind of curious. Do you guys do the majority of your training with Arcadia with private industry or with government, or is it just kind of a mix of both?
It's a mix of both. It's generally technically still, I would say, more on the government type side, but there's a lot of different reasons for that, right? With private industry, government side, let's say military or law enforcement or county emergency services of some sort, right? They're in the business of being prepared, right? And understand that training is a part of that. Well, private organizations tend to look like, training for my employees, man, they just look at that as a cost versus looking at it as an investment, right? So is that a lot of them are now kind of realizing, oh, wait, if I do invest in my employees and I increase their cognitive acumen, right, I get them thinking more critically, wow, like I'm going to get a huge benefit out of that for the organization as a whole. So there are some out there, but it's kind of crossing that bridge and getting them to see that, you know, it's more than just reading a quote off of LinkedIn or reading a book about leadership or organizational change. You actually, that's all education and that's great. But if you want results, you gotta do some training. And as we say, training changes behavior. So government side they kind of get that a little bit more. But private sector is absolutely coming around on that though.
Yeah. And I would imagine now with all the, you have a lot of things in private industry that have become pretty dangerous, and not necessarily only overseas.
No, and you brought it up. Go ahead, Greg, yeah.
No, and I just want to jump on the same point, Brian. We're birds of a feather on this one. See, you just brought up a very good point. Look, workplace violence that turns into a domestic, that turns into a armed shooter inside of your business. We read it all the time. School shooting, you know, the disenfranchised kid that's going to shoot up his own school. Those are insider threats. But I would tell you that you are more likely to get struck by lightning. You're more likely to win the lottery or to get bit by a shark, then you are to be a victim of a crime or a terrorist. But that doesn't mean that you should look the other way. The idea is that you prepare your physical health and your mental health for situations of adversity. You know, we spent billions of dollars as a nation to be prepared for the COVID virus, and look how well that did. So a little bit of well-placed training is going to change. An employee of your company sees more in the first 15 minutes. The person that cleans up and vacuums your office sees more in an hour than most of the people that work at a normal company the whole year. And so what we do is we try to get in there and tell them that, and I'll bash businesses for a minute, and the business goes, wow, that seems like a great approach, and it could impact our bottom line. How long does it take? And the minute you tell them, hey, it takes a little bit of time, and it takes a little bit of work, and it takes a little bit of money, that's when everybody says, yeah, but I can go online and be a ordained minister in 40 minutes. I can take a check-in-the-box training and spend $15 and have every one of my people certified. That's the difference. We as a society have gone dumber because every time we pull up and order a number three supersized in a clown's mouth and it works, we don't have to work as hard. We have to take a giant evolutionary step backwards and increase our situational awareness and our ability to think critically.
Yeah.
It's also very eye-opening how quickly we have become trained in a lot of those situations where if something doesn't go quite right, we're upset. You know, we had to wait an extra 2 minutes for something, or or we didn't catch the light, or, you know,
we want it now.
We get thrown outside of our bubble.
I've got a song about that, but I don't have it queued up, darn it.
and think about the news responses that you've read, and they're all absolutely predictable. When we're not sure what's next, when we get a little bit of fear, when we're up against an opponent and an opponent surprises us, we don't use our intellect. We increase the threshold or the level of violence. When we're not as resilient, rather than looking for help or going to get help, we injure or damage or cut or kill ourselves. These are things that we're going to have to deal with now, or they're going to plague America and the rest of the world for generations.
Yeah, I'd like you to keep going on that topic. We've got to take yet another quick break to celebrate capitalism while we still can. And we'll be back with our guests, Greg Williams and Brian Maron. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Waiting for someone to tell you everything. Sit around and wonder what tomorrow will bring. Maybe a diamond ring.
Well, it's all right, even if they say you're wrong. Well, it's all right. Sometimes you gotta be strong. Well,
this old man and me, we're at the bar and we're having us some beers and swapping night on cares. Talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks, old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace, all the hell we raised. Then I heard the old man say, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy.
The format for every good behavioral training class you'll ever take.
Yeah. What's the three things that are most important?
The three most important things. So, Greg, I was curious because on your resume it says you've developed programs for private security firms, several major airlines, numerous school systems, first responders, and law enforcement agencies. So, like as far as recognizing, because like whenever we have one of these things, I don't care if it's in whatever one of those categories, it always goes to, well, we've got to take away everybody's guns and we've got to be completely paranoid and that's what'll keep us safe. But I don't think that's actually true.
Yeah, it's absolutely counterintuitive. So you have this horrific situation in Canada, and so the latest broadcast this morning out of the Canadian news is that they're searching for the decals, who produced the decals to make the fake police car, how the person was able to get the, you know, the patches for his uniform so he looked so real, and of course we're banning guns. You know, do whatever it is that you think you need to do, but that's like turning on a nightlight because you're afraid of the monster. You're also shutting the barn door after the horrific incident. The idea is, are you telling me that this guy made this uniform and he made this car in complete isolation? That he never spoke out against his old lady, his wife that he had a domestic violence situation with, or never threatened the police or his neighbors? All people give off pre-event indications of violence. All boxers telegraph the punch that's coming. All you got to do is slow down and learn how to read it. But if you go through your life on transmit, think of a radio, like the radio that we're on. I'm a huge fan of Marconi. If you're doing nothing but broadcasting, you're not listening. And if you only listen with your ears and you don't listen with your brain and with your heart, you're going to miss those cues. And all of those cues were evident. They were just missed. School shooters, the cues were there. They were just missed. Church shooters, the cues were there. They were just missed. So all we want to do, I've been on a crusade for 38 years now, to open eyes, to Saul on the road to Damascus and see the scales fall from folks' eyes so they can see those pre-event indications. And luckily, I run into people like Shelley, our CEO, Brian, former scout sniper, people that are really, really smart and have that ability. And if I can turn them into the best teachers possible to go out to the community, then we might have something.
Yeah, because you always hear it. Just like, I mean, it makes us mad, so it's got to probably just cause you to go berserk. But it always happens after things like that. They start listing off all the things that were happening. He was a wife beater. He got in a fight with his neighbor. He got fired from his job. I mean, the list. And it's like, oh, wow. And nobody thought the guy might go berserk.
Right. To that point, too, is also what happens a lot, too, is we all humans fear things that we don't understand. We have a natural fear. And that's what's kept the human race alive, actually, all this time, despite our best efforts sometimes, right? And so when we don't understand something, it becomes the boogeyman effect, right? So it amplifies, it gets even bigger and larger and scarier, and we want to blame something. So instead of accepting responsibility as a community and a nation and a society, we want to blame, right? And we want to say, well, this is the reason. So when a lot of these things happen, a perfect example that Greg brought up in Canada, everyone goes, well, it's the gun. And we're going, well, no, the gun didn't do it. The gun is an inanimate object. A human did it. And regardless of your political views on that, like, that's, you're not actually addressing the problem. We're not addressing the actual situation. So, but if I've never fired a gun before, or I've never seen it up person, or I've never handled it, it's scary to me. I don't know. So that must be what it is, because we don't want to deal with the mental health and substance abuse issues that our society has. We just want to blame something. So that's kind of where this comes. And remember, we all do it. We all do it with everything, right? And Greg brought it up, as we have very fragile ego systems, right? I don't ever want to be wrong. I don't ever want to be, on the wrong side of things. So we're very focused on what our own personal beliefs that we project that onto others. So that's part of why that comes in, too.
What do you think in the last 20 years? Do you think there's more threats out there for the average person walking down the street? Do you think there's more to be aware of and more to be concerned about than has been in the past?
That's such a great question, and it's a loaded question too. So the internal combustion engine is taken off, and people are pretty excited about this thing called driving. And driving, I predict that there's going to be, 50,000 fatalities on the road every year, and people shouldn't drink and drive because it diminishes their capacity. I'm having fun with you, only based on the fact that, no, I don't think there's an additional risk now. I think that all the same risks are the same risks. I think that guns are dangerous in the wrong hands. I think that mental health unchecked is going to create a powder keg that's just looking for an ignition source to go off. I think that terrorists and criminals are are going to go to extreme means to ply their trade and get their message across. I think what's happened, though, is the advent of technology has made us collectively dumber. We rely so much on our phones that we don't want to look at what's right in front of us. Because one sense has been enhanced, we're losing touch with the others. And I want to let Brian speak, of course, but I think that increasing technology isn't the best thing, and I think that we have to go back and start sitting down at the kitchen table with our kids and teaching them, you know, look, listen, feel, stop, drop, roll, hear no evil, speak no evil, all these great things that grandma and great-grandma taught us, because they're going to make us safer as a society.
Well, and look at the things that our dads probably harped on, too. You know, when you first meet someone and you shake their hand, you can tell a lot about a person at that point. I mean, I never interviewed anyone for a job that the handshake wasn't a major tell, I guess. And now somehow we've decided we don't need to do that anymore. And so going forward, I think we're eliminating things that have helped us for, I don't know, since the beginning of time.
You're absolutely right. Despite what a lot of us want to think, we need human connection and interaction. Like we all humans need that, right? There's, you know, I know everyone's like, oh, I can take care of myself and live off the land and do that. Like that's great, but you still have some network or clique or group. It may be much smaller than other people, but we need that connection. And so part of the problem with technology, it's two sides of a coin, right? Look at all this information I have at my disposal right here in my pocket. But what is that information that I'm taking in and what does it really mean? And Bill, to kind of go back to what you said about crime and is it safer, is the best thing that the FBI does is they have crime statistics and they study everything down to so much detail because they have the resources to do that. And it's absolutely incredible. So if you just look at the data and look at the numbers, every single crime statistic for the last 25 or 30 years has gone down and continues to go down. Now, when I pick up my phone or I check my email or I turn on the TV, does it look like that on the news? Well no, right. It doesn't look like that at all. But the numbers don't lie. And so is the world getting safer? Yes, in a sense. But are we also getting a little bit dumber and a little bit less reliant on ourselves and more reliant on technology? Yeah, so that has other consequences that we may not realize. We're now, given the situation we're all in right now with COVID, it's like, hey, people are taking a look going, man, was I really prepared for this? And what if something like this happens again and it's much worse? So that's where training and education come in.
Yeah, I could totally see the technology part of it.
We could talk for hours on that.
Okay, we've been like puppies. We're just like running all over the place. We'll let you guys do a little bit more of directing us. How about that when we come back? Because we've got them hostage for the second hour. Yay! We are We the People Radio. You can find all the information about our guests, and there's a lot, at wethepeopleradio.us. Welcome to the second half of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. You can get pretty much anything you need relating to Ag and Turf there at Pape Machinery. Give them a call at 226-9226.
There wasn't even a one in it.
I know it. I don't know where that came from.
Don't look at me when you're talking because I was giving off the wrong information.
You were. 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And go by and get a generator from them before PG&E shuts your power off, because that's coming probably in the next 30 days.
And they have Honda generators, not the really loud ones that are at Costco. Besides that, Costco is going to make you wear a mask after the 4th. Boo.
Yeah, got to wear a mask. We won't require you to wear a mask.
Just say no to masks.
Pape.
No, go get a Honda generator. It's quiet.
Yep.
And so let's see. You can get archives on our website at wethepeopleradio.us. You can find commercial free, free to listen to, lots of fun information too, because we build a page for every single show with all the information that our guests talk about. If they reference any other websites or articles or things, those are all on there for you. And you can take the MP3 files. I don't care if you burn them onto CDs and sell them to your friends. I mean, why would you do that? But, you know, or if you raise money for an organization, go right ahead. We don't have copyright issues. You can also find us locally here in the Reading area on KRDT channel 23.7 on Tuesday nights on the American Uncensored News Network.
There you have it.
Go figure that out.
Hey, before the break, we were talking about how technology has really kind of dumbed us down a little bit as far as our own.
Let's find out if you're reading my mind. Are you going to ask my question?
I don't know.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't know. But it kind of reminded me, just to show you how far we've come. When I was in high school, I remember when a kid brought a pocket calculator to school, and everybody was like, wow, what is that? You know, and when the teachers found out he had it, he had to leave it in the locker. I mean, you had to know your math. No cheating.
Okay, the sad part is I actually remember that, too.
Yeah, there was no cheating on that. And now, shoot, kids take a cell phone to school. They don't have to learn anything.
Just look it up,
you know. So you go downtown now and you look at people. Where was I the other day? I was sitting in a waiting room somewhere, and every single person in there had their head down looking at a cell phone as people were walking in and walking out. And I thought, wow, somebody could walk in here with a club and hit everybody in the head and they wouldn't even look up. You know, it's just nuts. No interaction anymore.
Okay. There's Bill's two bits. Boy, he's been percolating that for a long time. I'm glad you got that off your chest.
Yeah, I feel better.
It's a little bit of therapy in this show, too. I was curious, Brian or Greg, what about the cameras people put in their houses? Besides the fact we don't have them at our house because I think it's creepy, but like in their houses or outside their houses, does that make it them? I mean, obviously everybody's different, but does that generally make people more vigilant or less vigilant?
I would say probably at first, when you first put them in, right? You know, people go, oh, wait, there's a camera there. And then slowly, guess what happens real quick? You forget that it's there. So it's like when anything would come with cameras, first of all, if cameras are great, like I have one of those Ring doorbell cameras so that anyone walks up to us, I can see who it is. And it automatically records a few seconds and all that stuff. And I love that just because you can go back and look at that. But that's the thing is that it's usually used after the fact, after something happened, right? So it doesn't do a real good job of preventing anything sometimes. And also you look at countries or cities where they have a ton of CCTV, like closed caption television. Like you go to London and there's cameras everywhere. I mean, more than we ever see here in the U.S. And guess what it does to crime? Well, not a whole lot, it turns out, right? So in some areas, it might have a little bit of a deterrent, but then over time, we forget it's there, and we continue to go on about our life as if it wasn't there.
Yeah, so it's not the big solution that it's kind of put forward. It's interesting to me that for the average citizen, I've always found that like keeping your porch light on at night. Your front lights on. I mean, that's an easy deterrent to crime. I think it's way better than a camera. And yet, I look at all these neighbors who have cameras. The lights are off.
Yeah, and that's another great point, right? We're all about low calorie solutions, things that are simple, that are easy, that don't take a lot of time or effort that you can do. And what you just brought up is literally making your home a harder target, right? If I'm a bad guy, if I'm a criminal, and I come walking by and I see those lights on, right, and you've got whatever else out, I don't want to go there, right? I'm just going to move along the street. I'm going to go somewhere else. So with things with crime, right, you know, we're never going to get rid of crime, right? It's getting better, but there's always going to be criminals out there. And so what you want to do is you want to protect yourself and your family and your community, and just every little bit that you do, you know, it might not get them to stop committing crimes, but it'll stop them from committing a crime at your home, and that's ultimately then that's a win for you, right? So simple things like that are much better than trying to capture something after the fact.
Yeah. I was curious, do most of your, I guess we've kind of made an assumption here, that most of your training is about, I mean, obviously the stuff overseas, you know, when you get into terrorism, but I guess that is a type of crime. Is all of your training basically geared toward crime and crime deterrent, I guess, for lack of a better...
Wow, that's an incredible question. And the simple answer is no. The idea is our training is about increasing human performance by allowing you to make better choices. So it's about sense-making to problem-solve and then being more adaptable to new and novel situations and building resilience by solving for X right more than you do wrong. So the idea is that any new situation, as a matter of fact, if you ever walked into a restaurant, you're with a bunch of people and you're all talking and it's a new restaurant and you're excited about going in and you go in and for just a second you forgot what you were talking about. Well, then your brain's saying, hey, shut up, let's take a look around here for a minute. Those are good skills that our primitive brains are still very good at saying, hey, give me a minute to make order out of chaos. Give me a minute to smell the parking lot to make sure there's not sulfur and cordite and there hasn't just been a shootout. What we have to do is we have to give ourselves the gift of time and distance. We have to mentally prioritize the most likely things that are going to happen in our life, and then we can start ignoring those, and the most dangerous things, and pay a little more attention to those. So whether we're teaching SEALs or Deltas or Special Forces or we're teaching, you know, a group of high school kids how to be more resilient and less prone to sexual harassment or suicide, it's the same core principles. One, how your brain works. Two, what's your visual field and the rest of your senses feeding to your brain? Three, how can I improve that message function and be quicker, faster at solving for X so I can avoid that next deadly or dangerous situation?
Yeah, I'm curious when you do the high school type seminars. I bet this is really popular.
Well, you know, it's
because it's not regular class,
the,
right?
The hardest, yeah, it's popular to everybody because the cool thing is doing what we do. Because the most common thing is, wow, where's this been all my life? Where was this before my you know first deployment? Why didn't I get this when I was in high school? The problem is the way we teach all classes, and not to bag on our education, our teachers are doing a great job. But remember, when we don't have a more Babsian approach, when we don't have a more involved approach with the teachers and the students, and certainly we're learning a little bit of that now when, you know, Brian at home had to become a second grade teacher all over for his kids. My kids are all older. But the idea is that you have to make learning fun and exciting. So we're using really, really hard science, but the idea is that we make it fun and we put it into practical application scenarios so you're not sitting in a classroom. You're out there learning it. You're practicing it and doing it in the moment. And that's, I think, what makes it much more popular.
Yeah.
See, that's very cool.
And you get to you participate in that before the fact, before the incident, instead of after.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that...
We had a guy, we were just talking about it on our way in today. We had a guy come on years ago who was a SEER trainer, and he had adapted it to a community type of training for just civilians. And I had gone to that years ago. And I'll tell you what, I have never forgotten that the three things you had to know was who are they, what do they want, and how far will they go to get it. And
see, look how good that is.
Oh, yeah.
See, if everything in our lives...
I could never forget it.
If it was distilled down to just three, and if it was very memorable, that's why training changes behavior.
Oh, yeah. He scared the crap out of us. He hired actors to come in with guns and abduct us. And so then he's like, okay, these are the three things you need to know.
Are you sure it was a class?
Oh, yeah.
Did you find your purse?
Oh, it was awesome. Actually, I rescued our group because I'm good under pressure. The other ladies, one of them just started crying and went mental and left. She failed.
She failed.
So it was sort of a thinning of the herd, I guess, as it were. We have to take a break. Look at that. Look at the time. We'll be right back with our guests, Brian Marin and Greg Williams. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
In the town where I was raised, clock ticks and the cattle graze. Time passed with amazing grace back where I come from. You can lie on a riverbank, paint your name on a water tank, miscount all the beers you drank back where I come from.
Good time, I'm having a ball.
Don't stop me now.
If you wanna have a good time, just give me a call.
Don't stop me now.
Cause I'm having a good time.
Don't stop me
yes,
now.
I'm having a good time. I don't wanna stop at all.
Yeah, and that's kind of fitting because we have like 40 minutes left. What the heck?
I know, time's
all right.
Flying.
So guys, what didn't we ask you because you know... a million percent more than we do. What have we missed that you really think people should know? And then we'll just listen.
Well, I would put it in actually something you guys kind of brought up and that we can get back into is how we categorize some of these issues, right? Because you said, hey, I don't know what this sharp, sad, or gatekeeper stuff, programs that we've done before in the past, and they're all about prevention, right? And so the gatekeeper one was a part of a U.S. Army suicide prevention program. The sharp one was the sexual harassment assault response and prevention. Same thing as how do you identify these individuals. But all of these things that we're talking about can be classified under what we
There's
call...
There's something funky going on with the sound.
Threat.
Well, I think we're losing your mic.
Or, can you still hear me?
Oh, hey, there you go.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
You were getting all modulated.
Sorry about that. So the things that we kind of classify, like I said, is under what we call an insider threat, right? And which makes sense for any type of situation, like people talk about, hey, someone's going to kill me. How's this going to happen? How do I protect myself? It's like, well, look to your family and friends and people you already know, because that's actually, you're more likely to be hurt or injured or killed by someone that you know, right? So things like the suicide prevention, sexual harassment, assault, those are all insider threats, but so is a school shooter, meaning that's a kid that goes to that school, that's part of the community, that's an insider threat. And so a lot of these issues that we face fall under that category, right? We always fear the boogeyman and we're always looking up and out, but we gotta learn to look down and in too, right? Sometimes it might be a loved one or a friend or a coworker that has something going on that isn't being addressed and for whatever reason and things are starting to escalate. And that's more likely what we're going to come across versus any of these other crazy scenarios that a lot of people like to come up with.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because, yeah, the crazy stuff doesn't happen. It's the boring stuff. It's the going into the bank.
Yeah, and remember, the less novel the external experience is, the lower the threshold of excitement, the less arousal, the less we pay attention to it. And we constantly have two, you know, fallback mechanisms. We have the ostrich, which is, it's never going to happen to me, so I'm going to go stick my head in the hole and just not look for it. Or we have hypervigilance, which is just unsustainable. You don't need to put, you know, armed guards and extra cameras and, you know, do you, and I'm sure neither of you guys are as old as I am, but I remember walking home from East Detroit High School, and on my route, I walked home. I knew every neighbor all the way till I got to my house. I could say, I'm Mrs. Long, I'm Mrs. Johnson. You know, all the factory workers that were out on the porch would ask how school was. And you know, we had a community. What's happened is, again, to bash, you know, technology, what's happened is that we're happy to text message, but we're not as happy to call somebody. And COVID has really brought us back to Zooming and Skyping and talking to people in groups, which is great. I hope that part of it lingers around and being much more self-reliant. Resilience comes from getting knocked down, getting skinned knees, and getting back up again. And that's what America does better than any other country in the world. And we certainly hope that's happening here. So our training, the natural extension of sense-making and problem-solving and situational awareness, obviously, it's going to work for suicide prevention. Obviously, it's going to work for, you know, retention of the best and brightest in your corporation. Obviously, you're not going to leave as much money on the boardroom table when you're doing negotiations. Why? Because it's humans reading humans. And there's no machine in the world that's capable of doing that yet. And we're a long way from developing technology that can replace us.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. And I grew up in the same kind of neighborhood. Yeah, you did know everybody. You knew what was supposed to be there and what was not supposed to be there. And so that was really easy to take care of your home situation. Same too with school, actually. School wasn't really very much of a wild card. And I understand why they're, you know, increasing that perimeter security and things on school. But if the teachers were to have taken your training, and I was going to say the students, but how low do you go? Like how young can they be?
Yeah, well, and just one second, Brian. I'll let you answer that in detail. But I would say that, listen, if you teach your kids not to go near the oven and make sure that you tuck in your panhandle so you don't accidentally tip it on to little Jimmy when you're in the kitchen. If you say, listen, when you're riding your bike, roll up your pant leg so it doesn't get caught in the chain. If the kid's old enough for those discussions, then they're old enough for these discussions. And the idea is you start them early, you do it early, you do it often, and it becomes a habit. And then you don't have to train as hard because now it's a hard habit to break. Sorry, Brian, go ahead.
No, it's kind of just reiterating what Greg was saying is having those conversations, like he said, you know, early and often. We sometimes want to shelter our kids, right? We want to, you know, shelter them or you know, make them kind of get in their way of different threats or different things they're going to face, and we don't want them to have that hard life. But we should focus on, well, rather than trying to make the world around them, you know, safer or easier or however you want to articulate it, we should just look at, hey, how do we empower them? I want to make them better so they can face all those issues that they're going to face with a more competence and confidence. I mean, literally, how to develop resilience in your own kid. And like Greg said, is talking about some of these issues, you don't even necessarily know how. I mean, we have to do it sometimes with our 7-year-old at home. It's like, man, we see this stuff going on. Well, we can have a simple conversation to create communication and dialogue, and that way she knows, doesn't maybe fully understand it, but knows she can talk to us about it when she does see it or come up. She knows that's an okay subject to talk about. And I think just having those conversations, although they can be difficult, or that's the first step, right? That's how these things start to get better. You know, allow them the ability to communicate. And since we are bashing technology, which I regularly do, we'll look at the other side of the coin of that. We let our 7-year-old, because we don't want her, you know, face buried in the phone when she's out in public or doing that. Well, we got ahead of it. Let's start now. And we let her use an old cell phone that doesn't have an actual cell phone plan, but it can connect to Wi-Fi. And you know what she can do? She can text and video call her grandparents, her uncles, her little cousins that are the same age as her that live across the country. And you know what? That's really cool. And she learns responsibility and how to use it and when to use it. It's not allowed at the dinner table. I set my phone down on the dinner table the other night, and she's like, what are you doing? That's not allowed up here. And I was like, oh, my, you're right. I'm like, well, I guess this is working. But then it becomes less interesting. She's not always on it anymore because, you know what, it's just another thing. So now she wants to go outside and play and not be on the phone. So I think by getting ahead of it, you know, that's what we always try to say. It's always about prevention and being proactive. Now maybe that might not work for every family, but just trying to, how do you have those conversations and get ahead of the issues versus just waiting for something to happen and then reacting to it?
Yeah, I think it's really easy for parents to fall into that technology trap. You know, it's easier to, you know, turn on the TV and let them watch TV rather than go outside and play and interact with, you know, the neighbor kids and know mm-hmm. the neighbors. And
well, the fear trap, too. If you think about it, the fear trap started a long time ago because I'm probably older than you are, Greg, because in the 80s when my kids were little, I used to let them ride their bikes in the woods. And the other parents were like, what are you doing? They can't ride their bikes in the woods. I'm like, do you really think there's somebody hiding in the woods just waiting for a kid to ride by? I mean, you got a whole town full of kids. Why would you wait in the woods? I mean, that just seems dumb.
Right.
And they were there with their friends.
And that's why
be smart.
The books and films that are out there about somebody that would steal your kid are so exciting because it's so rare. It's so statistically insignificant that those people actually exist. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to be cavalier about it. You're not going to just forget it and say, Jimmy, here's a bottle of bourbon, go ride your bike. But by the same token, you know, training is the cheapest investment. It's cheaper than a gosh darn cell phone. And we still get some people and some educators and some chiefs of police, for example, that'll tell us, well, you know, with these kids, we don't want to bring that stuff up because if we bring it up, that might give put ideas in their head. Well, I would liken that to sex education where somebody says, hey, my kid doesn't need the sex education. I don't want to put ideas in their head. But if you're not going to talk to them about it, somebody is.
Yeah,
and I'd
right.
rather have an expert that was there than to have some guy on the street say, hey, here's my 2 cents.
Yeah, well, if they've learned it in a training, they're much more likely to bring it up to their parents or their teachers that they saw something that fit into what they learned. And I would imagine the same goes for companies, too. If you're allowed to have a dialogue about things that are weird, because if you look at our companies these days, you're not allowed to bring up anything that's weird because that
right.
means you're a hater. And, you know, you've got to go to HR to get your ethics training again or whatever. So you're not allowed to bring
sensitivity
up sensitivity training.
I
failed,
that.
So I don't even know what it's called.
Been there, done that.
It feels so nice.
No, but you're exactly right. Both of you are exactly right. The idea is if you see something, say something, is a great national plan. But if you don't have the basic architecture for what is it I'm looking for, what's
yeah.
it look like, and who do I tell? And I don't mean a 1-800 number. That's not going to help me. Listen, do I go to HR when I think the person in the next cubicle is about to unwind? When I see somebody doing something unhealthy or what looks like self-harm or discussing fighting a coworker, what do I do with that information? Listen, that's what takes training, and you're not going to get that from queuing into some website or going into some 15-minute webinar. Do you remember the old Jack Webb Motorola videos? You got to get a little bit deeper with that. You got to interact with other human beings. You have to have an expert leading the discussion and the training, and then you're going to walk away with some tangible skills that you can pay forward to any situation, not just wartime, not just cops, maybe going to the 7-Eleven, maybe stopping and getting fuel in your vehicle.
Yeah, because I think that's the stuff we do all the time. That's where our exposure is. But, I do think that a lot of times the excessive, in everything goes, we're in that everything goes phase, I think, like it was back in the 60s. So you're not allowed to say anything is weird or bad. And I think we're going to have to get back to that a little bit and make some be discerning. How's that?
You're starting to hurt my feet.
My mom used to say be discriminating. It's like, ooh, that's out. I'm sorry.
As long
but
as you have artifacts and evidence, as long as you have a fact-based way of saying it, then you're not profiling somebody. Listen, we're not trying to hurt anybody's feelings. We're not trying to make anybody look bad.
Sorry.
We're going to try to, one of the things on your website, you've talked to and interviewed whistleblowers. And we promote that, right? We want a whistleblower to make our nation safer and stronger. So that's the same thing. If you see something, say something at work, you could save a life and maybe your own life.
Yeah, I think so, too. When we come back, I'd like to kind of talk about some of the interesting ones you've done. Like, I mean, we haven't talked about airlines or any of that. Not that we're allowed to fly anywhere, but, when we get to do that again, how can we be smarter passengers? I've always heard you should wear lace-up shoes, but... that's about all I've got. Maybe that was just my mom.
That's a great, actually. We'll get into that. You're already hitting on it.
She was right. That and, the whole clean underwear thing. But so you're listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm starting to hurt my feelings.
I'm solid, I'm steady, I'm true down to the core. And I will always do my duty, no matter what the price. I've counted up the cost, I know the sacrifice. Oh, and I don't want to die for you, but if dying's asking me, I'll bear that cross with honor, cause freedom don't come free. I'm an American soldier, an American, beside my brothers and my sisters, I will proudly take a stand. When I will always do what's right. I'm out here on the front lines, sleep in peace tonight. American soldier, I'm an American soldier. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Your name at the top of his list and the Statue of Liberty star.
is raining down on you. I'll brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
We had to have a full Toby Keith selection. We can't talk to veterans and not play those. It's not possible. So before we wind up in the crush of the top of the hour, I wanted you guys to let people know how they can get a hold of you. And because I'm sure, you know, people are listening thinking, hey, this is a good idea. I'm assuming you teach outside the U.S., but maybe not. So maybe do a little shameless plug there.
I would love to do the shameless plug. Thank you. First of all, the best place is going to have all of our ways to get a hold of us is at the website at ArcadiaCognarati.com. But we're also all over social media. So we've got Arcadia Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter. We've got it all. We also actually do a podcast called the Less of Greg podcast. So it'll play on us every time we go anywhere. I always have to, you know, when we go for anywhere for work and training, I'm driving and Greg's sitting in the front seat. And the conversations we have in the car are basically the same conversations we have in the podcast. It's where the idea came from. I'm always sitting to the left of him. So that's a great resource of information, especially on the website, too. Greg writes what we call lessons learned. So we'll take a bunch of different topics or scenarios or people that you may have heard the story about before, and then link them all together in some way that you're like, wow, I had no idea these three concepts had to do with each other, or these people were historically significant in some other way I'd never heard. So it's really cool stuff, and that's the whole idea about taking lessons learned out and then conceptualizing so we can learn from again. But website is definitely the best place to get a hold of us and has all of our contact information on there.
And just for people who maybe aren't tuned into our site, just I want to spell it for people. It's ArcadiA. And that's the Arcadia part. And then the second word is Cognarati, CognerAti.com. And, I email a lot of people if I hear something neat or I see something on TV, somebody interviewed, and I'm thinking, oh, that person's interesting. You know, we should hear more from them. Because most people that are interviewed get to talk for 2 minutes and you don't learn anything.
Right.
And so I thought, well, I'm just going to email these guys. So I send in a generic email. I think, Brian, you got back to me in like 15 minutes or something. I was blown away.
I try to get follow up as quickly as possible with anyone who reaches out to us. That's the work we want to be doing. When you're like, hey, you want to talk about this, or hey, I have some questions, that's what we enjoy, right? I've got all kinds of other stuff I got to do, you know, for the business all day long. But when we get stuff like that, I try to respond right away. I think also, I don't want to pat myself on the back here too much because I think you might have caught me right when I was checking everything.
Well, you seriously were a world record holder. I'm like, who is this guy? This is going to be fun.
What really usually occurs is I get back as soon as I check it. But I do try to do that right away, and then I try to get responded as quickly as possible. But, that is the best way to get a hold of us is via email like that, the info@ArcadiaCognarati.com. But yeah, I think you might have caught me right when I was actually checking it. So, be patient. If it's the weekend, it might take a little bit of time. If it's during the week, I'll get to you probably by the end of the day at a minimum. So.
Yeah, it was impressive. I was like, well, that was easy. Huh. You should give lessons. You should add that to your resume.
He's up, Aaron. That's going to go to his head and. The zero money I pay him for administrating the website.
So pretty soon.
Like you and Bill, I don't think we're getting any money right now.
Yeah, we pay for the airtime, so we're extra. We're extra dopey. But we started doing this a long time ago, and it was kind of they asked, hey, do you want to do a show called We the People? We're like, I don't know, never done it before. And then we started going and thought, gee, this is sure a great way to learn about a lot of stuff. So anytime we think not doing it, it's like, think of all the things we'll miss.
And to your point, too, and it's the same thing you said when you email, and this is why podcasts are so popular, too. People are looking for that. People are sick of the two-minute clip of some quote-unquote expert or seven of them on the television all at once yelling at each other.
Yeah.
And you don't get any substance out of that because all of these issues we're talking about can get fairly complicated or complex, right? So you got to find someone, and you're going to have that discussion and go, oh, wow, I didn't know all of that, or there's so much more to this than I realize. And that's what people are just searching for. They want that. So that's why podcasts have blown up. That's why I'm sure your show is successful. If people go, well, I want to hear more. Like, tell me what's really going on here, rather than just shouting your opinion at me. So yeah, that's why I love it, and I love what you guys are doing. I think it's awesome.
Well, I think it's super fun. And tell me this. Do you guys train outside the country?
Oh, yeah, we do. Real quick, Greg. So before we get into this, just I'll let Greg take it. But as your legal advisor, remember dates, locations. Let's keep that out of it, and then story.
Yeah, that's a great point, Brian.
Are you going to have to kill us if we find out?
So it's U.S. military, foreign military, as long as they're coalition forces and ICAR restrictions are in place, but. We've done, Europe and the Middle East, and 53 countries have received a form, one or the other, of our training. And so we're highly mobile. We don't have a brick-and-mortar facility. The Rogue Manor West, as I lovingly refer to it, and Brian, I'm in Colorado. Brian is in California. And what we do is we do most of the setting up of the business via the internet through Brian's work with the webinar and or the web rather in the social media. You can see how good I am at it. And then we fly a lot, we travel a lot, and do in-person training. In-person training is absolutely the best. Of course, there's some things that you can do with distance learning and virtual, but in-person, man, we're humans. We've got to see, feel, smell, touch, taste. We've got to touch things and break them and push them over to learn good skills, and we love doing that. Yeah, we go anywhere.
I think that's cool. Yeah, I actually wasn't implying that you guys would just go to anybody who paid you. I mean, obviously, like people who are on our team, you will train.
I don't know. How much are they paying?
I hear the Chinese are looking for some good help.
Oh, exactly.
How's your PR?
Wow.
I'm sorry. I made it ugly. I apologize.
Yeah.
I took it to a dark place.
Yeah, you made it weird. Hey, we're gonna come up on a break in a couple of minutes, but before we run out of time, I'd also like you guys to talk about the Carry the Load and Crusades 22. I know those are both things that you're active in, and I think they're good causes.
Yeah, no, Crusades. We'll start with Carry the Load. Greg and I are both. Greg is too. We're ambassadors for Carry the Load, and what they do is the whole idea was bringing back the kind of meaning of Memorial Day. It started by a couple former SEALs a few years back. One guy by the name of Clint Bruce, U.S. Navy Naval Academy football player, then SEAL, just great guy, big, you know, a wonderful human being who created this, but. His whole thing was he was at a kind of Memorial Day barbecue with his family and friends, and he just wasn't getting, like, he said that this isn't what this is about, and he was upset to the point where his wife was like, hey, you need to go take some time. You need to go for a walk or do whatever. You got to clear your head. So he threw a backpack on and went down to a park down in Dallas and started walking around, and sitting in that park was this kind of old timer just sitting on the bench, and, you know, he had a little, like, you know, a veteran hat on or something, and he looked right at Clint Bruce and he said, hey there, young man, who are you carrying? And it just kind of clicked in Clint's head. He's like, man, I'm walking around with all of my friends that I lost, you know, metaphorically speaking, I'm carrying them around. And then it just kind of blew up from there. He started Carry the Load, and it's bringing back the meaning for veterans, law enforcement, first responders, those types of folks who serve our community, state, and country, and have paid the ultimate sacrifice, just to kind of honor them by talking about them and keeping their stories alive. And they support these different organizations, so they collect a lot of money, and then they give that to different nonprofits who are doing specific work in areas that they're aligned with. And then Crusade 22, same thing. So that's combating the veteran suicide epidemic through a whole bunch of different technologies and training and different mental health programs kind of all put into one. And that's moving forward into this type of virtual reality training, all kinds of really cool stuff. But it's the same thing. It's just supporting those folks who have skinned their knees and kind of haven't really figured out how to fix it yet, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to kind of put a dent in this nationwide epidemic of suicide. And those are two great organizations that we love doing work with.
Great.
That is awesome.
Yeah, an easy way to get a hold of Carry the Load is just carrytheload.org. Stephen Holley's their current president and CEO. Debbie Wright's the executive director, Hallie Johnson. There's such great people there, and it'll make you feel good about America again.
Well, that's not something we could ever run short on. We have to take a really quick break again. Our last salute to capitalism and salute to our. When you said Memorial Day, I thought, oh, I know what we'll play. So we'll be back with our guests, Brian and Greg. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
And some gave all, and some stood through for the red, white, and blue, and some had to fall. And if you ever think of me, think of all your liberties and recall. Some gave all.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
Okay, now we're down to the last like 10 minutes. Can you cram in everything else we didn't talk about?
just like you said before, hold on. Now, before we get too much further, though, give me an opportunity, Aaron and Bill, just to thank you so much. Longtime fan of radio, huge, important media of transmission. Having us on, we're very honored to be on. Also, Aaron, your story, your parents, that's a veteran, and your brother is a Green Beret, and the work that you've done for the VA, we're huge fans of that as well. Thanks for giving back, and thanks for giving us the time to be heard.
Absolutely. Well, you know, if we don't share the resources, there's really no point. And it's interesting that our program, although it's called We the People, so you think it would be uniquely American, half of our listenership, and sometimes depending on the topics that we're covering, at any given time, half of our listenership online is out of the country.
Wow. Easily understandable, though. I mean, the thing is, remember that, you know, we've been a lot of different places, and in some places you can't speak openly about a variety of topics.
Right.
And every place that we've been lucky enough to teach and go, we've been welcomed, and it's been just an amazing response. And guess what? There's a lot of smart people out there. And I would tell people, don't be afraid to travel. The world is an incredible place, and the more well-traveled you are, the more you'll learn.
Yeah, that's a good plug, because now it looks like, well, now they're telling everyone to stay home. They're afraid to go to the grocery store. So traveling the world's probably like off the bucket list for a lot of folks.
Brent and I thought we were in deep Tim Shee, because the last few places that we trained, we left Dallas, went to Philly. We left Philly and went to New Jersey to Virginia. And then, you know, we came home, and where I lived, Gunnison was closed. They were at the Montrose Airport telling me, no, you can't come in. And poor Brian had to go back to California. We thought, oh, my gosh, we're in the center of the maelstrom. And you know what? things are bad, okay? But things aren't the worst. We are a resilient people, and we're going to bounce back from this, too.
Well, I mean, not to be harsh about it, but at the end of the day, really, something that has basically a 99% survival rate, probably not the thing that's going to take most people out.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, but you wouldn't know that listening to the mainstream media.
Oh, I know. It's like, be afraid. Be very afraid. Hide under your bed. The one thing that has come out of it that's kind of funny, sort of off topic, although we did discuss guns earlier, the folks on the left that hate guns are getting a real, I guess we'd call it a comeuppance a little bit here. They're finding out you can't buy guns over the internet, and you can't go buy a gun legally in 5 minutes. And what's up with the 10-day waiting period? And why do they have to do a background check? And what about the gun show loophole?
It's funny. It's funny how that works, right? I mean, it all goes into, you know, behavior and fear and not understanding and how we react to it and controlling our emotions. There's a lot involved, and what happens too is, you know, people start acting irrationally and you know, which you're going to do things you wouldn't typically do because, you know, you might say, oh, well, I can handle this, or I have a plan, or I can do this. But then all of a sudden your neighbor is freaking out and buying 300 rolls of toilet paper. Now you go, wait a minute, maybe I need to go buy toilet paper. And that effect continues as we see that. And then now it's going like, whoa, 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 slow down. Don't follow in line with the people who way overreacted to the situation, right? Be smart, be sensible, use some logic, and use some critical thinking.
Yeah. So
and learn from this. You know, pay this forward. Take a look at what you did right. Take a look at what you did wrong. Get those lessons learned and create an institutional memory. An institutional memory for your family, for your company, for your loved ones. This is simple. And learn from those skin knees and mistakes. That's the true heart of resilience.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. It took me 20 years, but those two cases of toilet paper I had stashed for an emergency. Bill kept asking me what kind of an emergency needs toilet paper. I'm like, any emergency where the public panics. He's like, that is ridiculous. But, hey, you know what? I had to wait 2 decades, but I got vindicated.
The New York Times and Washington Post, which they work perfectly as toilet paper for me.
Oh, my God. Well, it's really funny because there was a lady at the Small Business Administration who was helping me out with something the other day. And so I emailed her back and I said, you know, thanks a million. You're worth your weight in toilet paper. she was all excited.
That's great.
I was like, wow, how things have changed.
Good stuff.
So if you were going to, like I was telling you about that training I took, you know, the who are they, what do they want, and how far will they go to get it? If you guys were going to, you know, if you could make a shot and, you know, just give everybody the injection and then they would remember that forever, like, what are your top things?
There's a couple things, but Greg, I would add one real quick, and this is really important for when you're looking at any information or any behavior or someone, right, is that most people want their say, not necessarily their way. So criminals, terrorists, insurgents, your school shooter, those are people that want their way. Most people just want to do what? Well, I want to get me heard. I want to shout from the rooftops. I want to blast it out on social media. And I want to tell the world what I think. And that's okay, right? We have that right in this country, right? And so if I remember this, most people want their say, not necessarily their way. The only people I have to worry about, who are the ones that actually want their way? I would frame it that way. But I know, Greg, I want to really let you kind of wrap it there, Greg.
Yeah, and so your SEER instructor, you know, he epitomized it in three things. I would say if we were going to talk about just three things, baseline plus anomaly equals decision. Somewhere in your baseline of what you do every day, you're going to run into something that's incongruent. That's an anomaly. It's something above your baseline. It's something below your baseline. And when you see that, stop, take a few extra seconds to look at it, because that's where the danger lies. If everything is going along swimmingly, and it seems like every other day, you're probably doing pretty good. But if all of a sudden it's, you know, the hustle and a person's talking to you and the vehicle is coming a little too close behind you and things feel uncomfortable, trust your instincts. Baseline plus anomaly drives that decision.
No, I think that's
good.
Yeah, that's super helpful. And I like the idea about most people want their say but not their way. That's true, because most people will just talk to you. But then there are the you know, the Bernie supporters who will go completely bananas and burn your house down. Oh, wait, did I say that out loud?
No, you can't say that.
Oh, okay, sorry.
No, but it's true.
No, think about that, though. You're spot on. I mean, you wear the wrong hat and you're a victim.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not the America that we grew up in.
No, and it's not the whole side of that paradigm. It's a segment where they can't have a rational discussion. Part of that segment, you don't say the right thing. You're a racist. You're a bigot. You're a hater. You're whatever. There's a name call. But then there are the other guys that you know, they want to wear a mask all the time before the pandemic,
right?
And they want to clock you with a 2x4.
Exactly.
I ruined the show. Are you still
nice,
there?
Nice one, Aaron.
No, well, I'm writing. Yeah. I got my yellow pad and I'm writing that. So Aaron, you nailed it. What more can you say after that?
The part about the 2x4.
No, like, that's a perfect example of someone who wants their way, and you're exactly right. And that's I don't care where on the political spectrum, religious, social, cultural, whatever your ideology is, there's people that want their say, and then there's people that want their way. So, you know.
Well, it's funny because I could figure it out, but I take my dog to the office, and the dog knows the difference. He can spot literally the political differences. One, he kind of doesn't do anything. The other one, he kind of is afraid of, and the other one, he growls at. And the growlers are the 2x4 guys.
Yeah, but the greatest thing, and we all know where the jokes and where the serious part is, but for the people that are listening in, this isn't rocket science, but it is science. It is sociology and psychology and cultural anthropology, and we've spent a lot of time looking at it. And you know what? Whatever the incidents are, there's always pre-event indications of violence. Nothing comes out of nowhere. So all you got to do is look for those incongruent signals, and anytime you're in a situation where somebody wants their way and their say, you probably need to get out of it.
Yeah.
Yep. I would totally agree.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you guys coming on. This has been a flash 2 hours.
It's not as late as you think, Bill. In reality, we're looking at a clock that says that we have 10 seconds left, but really we have almost a minute.
No.
The atomic clock. Yeah. You know, when you get those atomic clocks, I don't know why some atomic clocks are atomic and other ones are.
I depended on technology. Look at that.
But.
we'd be honored to be invited back. If only so you can read the rest of my resume.
Honestly, there's if people, I encourage people to go online and look at this because, honest to God, there are acronyms in here. I may think, so what? So we would love to have you guys back. We had a great time. We learned a ton, and we wish you guys nothing but success. We hope your phone rings off the hook. Well, no, hope your email blows up. That's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, there you go.
Wait. Don't expect an answer in 5 minutes like Aaron got.
No, it's a lie.
I appreciate you guys having us on. All right, great people to talk to and a great discussion. So,
all right, thanks, fellas. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us with all the information and catch us Tuesday nights on the American Uncensored Network at 23.7 on your Rabbit Ears TV.